because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsinized summary of this week in the Capitol. J.R., it didn't take Republicans long to pick another fight with unions. This would be the second fight in 4 years. The emergence of the right to work movement now, you have State Representative Chris Kapinga said it's going to be one of my first bills, which was news in and of itself, but then Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald says, oh, it's going to be one of the first things we're going to act on. When I did candidate interviews, this wasn't on my screen. Did I screw up? Where's it coming from?
Well, let's go back. Republicans have wanted to do this for a long time. So this has been an issue that's been percolating for a while. But every time you'd ask leaders about it, they go, oh, it's not the time, it's not the time. They kept downplaying it because the governor said it wasn't a priority. But what's kind of changed is they've got bigger majorities now than they had before. The base wants it. The drumbeat from talk radio is amping up. And even though Walker wants it to go away, there's too much momentum for it now for it to die out. I mean, this is something they've wanted to do for a while. They just now have, they're feeling their oats. They've got capital, they want to spend it. You know, that's what happens when you win elections.
Were you surprised that Fitzgerald said it's going to be one of the top things that we act on as we await for the Legislative Fiscal Bureau summary of the budget and joint finance?
Well, there are a couple nuances of what Fitzgerald said. He said they're going to take it up. Now, actually voting on it, that might not happen right away. But they're going to deal with it because, as he said, if not now, when? And he said, I'm not going to be the guy who's at the podium saying we're not going to do this because we don't have the will to do it. He said, look, my members, the veterans, they've been through protests. They're not afraid of those. Right. So let's go. But there are a couple of key things, these nuances. Fitzgerald talked about what would be a state-specific bill. Now, there's straight right to work, you know, that kind of legislation. There's also ones that have, like, nuances to them, paycheck protection.
Yeah.
You know, there's a kind of this array, if you will. And the one thing that Fitzgerald raised was the possibility of carve-outs.
Carve-outs.
For example.
So intriguing.
The operating engineer is 139. They're big fans of Scott Walker's. They endorsed him. Fitzgerald talked about operating engineers, I think plumbers and carpenters, people who, you know, have some special training, he said. Well, might they carve those guys out? Now, if you do that, you might lose people on the right of your caucus who want a straight, clean bill.
Right.
If you don't carve them out, you might lose some people on the middle of your caucus, you know, kind of the left end of your spectrum, middle of the wide spectrum, who might say, well, that's too conservative for me. I'm not ready for that. Now, there's this other nuance or kind of dynamic for Fitz is this. He's got two votes to lose this session. Makes his life easier.
Yes.
But Grothman, remember, he's got to resign his seat, join Congress first week of January. That special election won't be held until April. He's only going to be 18-14. So you only lose one and pass that bill until April-ish.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit dynamic there to watch. You know, so it's not clear-cut this bill's going to fly through the first week of January.
Well, the pure right-to-work bill says no worker can be forced to join a union and pay dues.
Yep.
And so that's the purity. But 24 other states have similar laws in some way.
Yes.
The governor this week said continue to keep it at arm's length. That would be a distraction. I'm focused on my budget. It's not on my list of agenda. But J.R., in 1993, didn't first-term state representative Scott Walker introduce a right-to-work law?
Oh, everybody I talk to thinks that Governor Walker believes philosophically in right to work. The issue for Scott Walker is he wants to focus on these other things. He wants to talk not about protests and fighting with unions. He wants to talk about a property tax cut, which we're expecting in his budget. He wants to talk about worker training, improving schools. He wants a budget done quickly, which you know has the benefit of this is how we govern in Wisconsin because we're in control. And, oh, by the way, I can get to Iowa in June rather than in July, you know, this summer, and start kind of like talking to folks at the local diner. So there's that dynamic, and his people kind of know that if right to work, I shouldn't say if anymore, but when right to work comes up, it's going to suck up the oxygen for a while. So instead of being talking about the things he wants to discuss, he's been talking about this. Now, the flip side is, you would think for Governor Walker, look, you've taken on public employees, why not private sector union? I mean, what's the downside? The people who backed Mary Burke, you know, AFL-CIOs, they're not your fans. Why
Never
not go
have
for
been.
It?
No? Tried to take you out with a recall in 2012.
Why not go for it? So there's that. There would be a benefit, you would think, especially in a Republican primary for president, that, look, this guy's got added credentials, that he took a second fight, you know. But the downside, again, is the distraction, the taking away from the folks what he wants to talk about. There's also a train of thought that, look, you know, Walker's already taken on the public employees and beaten them. What's it going to be? does he get extra credit for taking the private sector unions? There's not really a big upside from that.
Well, what about this COI position? He's not going to say whether he'd sign it or veto it. Do you think he has any other choice but with 82 GOP legislators in both houses but to sign it?
If it reaches his desk, there's no way he'd veto it. He would get, one, crucified by talk radio, and his base would go bonkers about it. Two, how does that help you in a primary for president? You go to people who are very conservative, you know, primary voters, really, really conservative voters, and say, yeah, I vetoed right to work. I thought it was a bad thing. I don't want to do that. No way. No way he vetoes that bill.
Okay.
That's the perception. Now, maybe he surprises us all and does it, but I haven't found anybody yet this week that says, yeah, Walker will veto it or issue a veto threat like what Jen Schilling and Peter Barker wanted to do. So, you know, we're going to shut this down now.
It was only hours after he said, we're serious about this, taking it up early, that Democratic Senator Schilling, Hansen, and State Representative Barker, the leader of Assembly Dems, said, don't do it.
Yeah.
You're going to harm the middle class. Yeah.
Now, what are those protests going to look like, by the way?
I mean,
after what happened in 2011, do you think, I don't see 200,000 people in the Capitol Square on a Saturday like it was with Act 10. But, you know, it might be kind of raucous. You might have, I also don't think you're going to see people camping out in the Capitol ever again, not with the new police chief. I mean, they will be sure to clear that building, you would think, every day. So it's not going to be as intense. And Walker even said it probably won't be as big as that. But there will probably still be some disruption to, like, the daily agenda, if you will, beyond right to work. And what's it going to look like?
So you and I agree that there seems to be the prospect of large protests showing up again, not on the scale of Act 10.
Probably
because all the unions have pulled out all the stops to take him out with the recall election. They lost.
And conservatives say, look, we've seen this play before.
We win.
We win in the end. So what's the big deal? And look at the enrollment in private sector unions anymore. It has been dwindling for years, even though Wisconsin is still has a good manufacturing
base. One of the highest
base,
percentage.
It's still a very small percentage of the overall population. Now, there are definitely lawmakers in some Democratic-leaning seats who are Republicans who probably don't want to deal with right to work.
Right.
But in the Assembly, you can lose 13 members of that Republican caucus and still pass the bill.
Still pass it.
So if you're a Dave Heaton in Wausau or Todd Novak down in Dodgeville, who have Dem-leaning seats with a Dem year coming up in 2016, you could, if you wanted to, not saying they would, but you could drop off the bill and still be fine. I mean, the overall caucus would be fine. So keep that in mind.
And I'm also easily surprised as we move to another subject. I was surprised that there was a story that there's going to be a bill to outlaw abortion after 20 weeks. Do you know who's going to carry that bill?
Not yet. There are a couple names who wouldn't surprise anybody that would probably come up. I mean, Andre Jacques has been at the forefront of a lot of these issues before.
Senator Lozick?
Possibly.
Possibly.
But 20 weeks, I mean, I talked to the new executive director of Wisconsin Right to Life months ago, said that's our number one priority the next session is getting that bill passed. So it's been clear it's been coming for a while. No shock it's coming up now.
Well, and it follows on the heels of you have to see the results of a ultrasound before you can have an abortion, and they've defunded Planned Parenthood, and you have to have admitting privileges in an area hospital.
Well, that's on hold right now.
That's on hold. The judges have put that on hold. So this follows on that. Do you see this as a centerpiece issue? Is it as important to GOP leaders as right to work?
Well, abortion, the issue got kind of a little bit caught up in a few things so we're still in this session, I should say. A couple bills that the Assembly wanted to do, the Senate didn't want to deal with, you remember? So there are some dynamics there, but you've got bigger caucuses, bigger Republican majorities who are more conservative. The anti-abortion issue is one that's kind of a cause for them. Governor Walker's made no bones about being opposed to abortion rights. Now, does he want to deal with those things and really embrace them ahead of what else he wants to talk about? It would be divisive again. Does he want that fight? I guess that's the question. Do they want that fight now or put it off until later, especially the budget coming up and right to work? I mean, how many things can you do at one time that are really contentious?
Well, let's assume he's running for president because he's giving every sign of that. If he signs a bill outlining abortion after 20 weeks, does that help him more of the presidential candidate?
Evangelical voters in Iowa, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's not a downside to him being strong on the anti-abortion issue when it comes to a Republican primary.
Okay. New topic. We now know the names of 14 to 16 members of the Joint Finance Committee, JR. Let's go through the senators. Darling, Olson, Harsdorf, Mark Lyon, Tiffany, Vukmir, and Taylor. How does Howard Mark Lyon, a freshman, get on the Joint Finance?
Numbers guy. He is an accountant. He provides Senate Republicans kind of their own numbers guy as opposed to Dale Kuyenga for the Assembly Republicans. gives him some heft in that regard. His background screams joint finance, right? I mean, he is a numbers guy. So that's part of it. Now, you also look at, like, who else is kind of in play, if you will, for the finance spots. And I don't get the impression that those folks were really passionate about getting a spot on the committee but were willing to do it. Howard, however, really fits with right. what they want to do. So I think that's part of driving force for him to get that spot.
Well, and now let's talk about the dynamics. Luther Olson and Leah Vukmir mm-hmm. on education issues. We'll come back to that in a little bit. Yeah. But they're now both on the finance committee. You look for some clashes?
Oh, absolutely. They come from a different viewpoint on something. Not everything, but on some things. Education being one of them. The choice issue is going to be one of the budget. Governor Walker's already said he wants to expand school choice. Robin Voss has said statewide. I think that is definitely going to be a play in the budget. So watch for those kinds of things. But if you look at the kind of the Senate Republican Caucus as a whole in that committee, you've got Southeastern Wisconsin represented in Darling and Vukmir. You get the North with Tiffany. You have numbers guy from Southwest and Markline. You know, you see some balance, if you will. Sheila Harzor from out Western Wisconsin.
Right.
The people come on are a little more conservative than Sheila and Luther, you know, on the surface. But it's going to be mostly a conservative caucus. The question will be, where do they split? Education might be one thing, but I don't know if you're going to see really huge, huge philosophical differences about things like cutting taxes or having a fiscally conservative budget, those kinds of things.
Now let's talk about the assembly members, those that we know so far. John Nygren, Cuenca, Knudsen, Schra, Laudenbeck, and how do you pronounce her name? Chaya. Thank mm-hmm. you very much for the correction. Any surprises there?
No.
He kept three and added
three openings.
Laudenbeck, Schra, and Chaya.
And Chaya, I mean, she much like Tiffany, gives you something from the North, provides some balance. Laudenbeck was long considered a near lock for the committee because she had been a finalist for a spot this session, didn't get it, did a lot of work in the elections, which Robin Voss's philosophy is, if you want a spot, you right. work for it. Yep. So go out and help with the cause.
She was unopposed.
She did that, went out and worked for other people. Schra, again, from a more conservative wing of the party, part of those freshmen and sophomores now, that class, they're getting their, kind of feeling their oats a little bit and getting more spots. So that gives you a balance, if you will, for them as well.
Doesn't Barca have to return Corey Mason of Racine?
Have to? Maybe not. What's interesting,
what other names have you heard?
Well, what's interesting for Democrats is you now have in the Senate, you have Taylor from Milwaukee and Erpenbach from Dane County.
Yeah.
So you have your two power bases for Democrats covered. So does Barca go a Milwaukee person, a Milwaukee area person? Nobody really stands out. Some people argue that Evan Goyke could have been that guy if he hadn't challenged Barca, but once you go after the king.
Once you go after the king and don't bring enough bullets.
Yeah, that's right. You're not going to get rewarded for that. So there are other people you could see from Milwaukee fit from there, but Chris Taylor from Madison is often mentioned as a Assembly Democratic member who might get finance. Now Republicans cringe, by the way, the thought of Lena Taylor and Chris Taylor ganging up on them during finance. Because the minority's job is what? Make it difficult.
Yeah.
Make your points. They're very good at making things difficult and making their points. So they're going to be fun to watch on finance. So where else does it go? Maybe Steve Doyle is somebody people have mentioned from
La Crosse?
Onalaska. Yeah,
Onalaska, you're right.
But Mason is the incumbent, and he's done some good work for them message-wise, so we'll watch that. He also said this week he's not going to run for county exec in Racine, which takes that off the table and makes it easier for him to come back.
Okay, let's go back to John Erpenbach. He's had a lot of opportunities to be on joint finance.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he wants to be in there, do you see that as a sign that maybe Erpenbach is still toying with running for governor in 16?
It's hard to see where he's talked about it so many times. I'm not quite sure that the foundation is there. John, though, is a very good message guy, and that's kind of why he brings to finance. Now, you also look at the Senate Democrats and kind of do subtraction, peeling people off, and go, okay, who's left who can do it? And John's one of those guys. I mean, Wirch was a Larson guy this session, so he
yes.
was going to come off. Larson's
yep.
not going to get the spot.
Right.
Beinhout is good with the base, but not good raising money. If you're on finance, minority party, part of your job is to help kind of, the overall cause, if you will. They got two new members in Bewley and Ringhan. Hanson's already, so you go down the list and kind of see where it's a small pool of people who get on the committee this
That's
time
good
around.
That's a good point. While we're talking about committees, it was interesting, Speaker Voss announced created a public benefit reform committee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the one that's going to go through Walker's plan to drug test those mm-hmm. if you get unemployment benefits, food stamps, and if you're getting unemployment benefits for X amount, you have to register with a temp agency. Have you heard any names who might chair that?
Not yet, but that's part of the reform part of the budget we're going to hear about. Remember, there's not a lot of money to deal with this session, so this coming session. So look for reform to be a word you hear a lot. We're going to reform benefits. We're going to reform government. We're going to reform, you know, that's part of the cause, what they're like trying to do.
And then Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, it was so interesting to you and I. We're going to give Senator Olson the traditional education committee, but we're going to create an education reform committee, which Assistant Majority Leader Paul Farrow.
It's the Anti-Common Core Committee, let's be honest.
That's the Anti-Common Core Committee? That's
so
your reading?
Farrow and Vukmir have been passionate about getting rid of Common Core. The fact that Farrow's chairing that committee suggests that Common Core is going to go there. They're going to do some kind of bill to write state-specific standards. Because Olson, remember, this session held up that legislation, was not interested, said, I don't support it. Didn't get through his committee. So you have two choices. Either you take out Olson as education chair, delay that bill to go through,
or you go around him.
And so it keeps Olson education for other issues, but gives us new vehicle to go after Common Core.
But some of this dynamic changes if Senator Paul Farrow is elected Waukesha County Executive. And let's face it, he's the most serious candidate out there, isn't he?
Right now, yes. So who else would take over the committee? What would they do with it? They will find a way, though, to do a Common Core repeal. That's what it looks like. I mean, we've both talked to Costell and Olson about Common Core, and Costell chaired the Assembly Committee this session that didn't go anywhere
with
that.
Took a lot of hit and retired.
Yes.
In the face of that.
And both of them will tell you this. Great, you want to repeal Common Core, go ahead. But once you set the standards that we all agree the standards should be, like the objectives for each grade level, once you lay them out from 12th grade backward to hit those benchmarks, whatever you do is going to look a lot like Common Core, whether you want to admit it or not. So that was his point. Now, the opponents of Common Core say, look, they keep pointing out how they're teaching math these days and saying, well, we're picking at these things, saying this is not doesn't make any sense. So watch for that dynamic.
Okay, final topic before we get to your stock picks. You know, for the second time this year, we saw senators exit quickly and then quickly get jobs that will continue, revolving door that will continue to have them play a role in public policy. Mm-hmm. State Senator Joe Lybum, defeated in the primary in the 6th Congressional District, resigns, a few hours later, chief lobbyist for the Foley and Lardner Law Firm, excuse me.
Yes. Ryan Murray went from Wiedek COO to the firm.
Yep.
Neil Kedzie. Went to Motor Carriers Association. Scott Suter went to PSC for a brief minute.
Yes.
And then went over to the paper council as a lobbyist. I mean, part of it is, if you think about it, if you're a lawmaker, the skill set you develop as a lawmaker doesn't really like lend itself to running a business, if you will, or any real-world expertise. It does, however, give you great foundation for a lobbying career. You know the issues, you know the people, you know the process works. It somehow, it makes sense in a lot of ways to end up there.
And they're probably, tripling their pay? Leggies next year will make $50,000 for the first time. Triple or quadruple their pay?
I don't know how big they go. It depends how good they are doing it, by the way. I mean, that's a big part of it. You know, just because you hang up a shingle doesn't mean you're going to be a success as a lobbyist. So, you know, but they are in demand in part because of the connections that they
have. And just a footnote, Senator Lybum, well, he's no longer senator, Joe Lybum will replace Ray Carey at Foley and Lardner. Mm-hmm. So I looked up who Ray Carey lobbied for last session, because you know we're in the process of re-enrolling. American Express, Aurora Healthcare, General Motors, Johnson Controls, Quick Trip, SC Johnson, Wisconsin Public Service Corporation, Boys and Girls Club, Deloitte Consulting. But he's not a lawyer. Is that a handicap, working for a major law firm?
I mean, good government groups, look, they always want to make the argument that there's things are bought and sold in the Capitol. But let's be honest, campaign contributions, lobbies, you don't buy an issue, but it gives you access. And that's what Joe Lybum offered. Any lawmaker offers. They offer a door to access to people because they have relationships. And that's what lobbying is about, having relationships, being able to get your foot in the door and say, look, I need to talk about this issue, and getting somebody's ear listen to you.
And joining the Motor Carriers Association, doesn't that put former Senator Kedzie in the middle of the transportation funding debate?
Yeah, good chance. I mean, and he chaired transportation in what, was it 05 or 07? He had that committee, I can't remember, 05 I think it was, 03, somewhere on there.
And Lybum, a member of the Finance Committee, President pro tem of the Senate.
Again, connections and access.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yep. Okay, well, thank you. Thanks for your patience. Time for Wispolitics stock pick, sir.
So rising Howard Markline, I went back and I picked some brains because this was before my time, but it is very rare for a freshman to go to finance. I found an example, Jerry Klutschka. He's elected to the Senate from the Assembly in 74, and then in 75 he was on finance. Now that is kind of like Markline's in the Assembly first. Mm-hmm. Kasten, I think, Bob Kasten, Republican, elected 72 from the private sector. finance of 73, that's a rarity.
Yep, it
but
is.
But other than that, I couldn't find any examples of people who were freshmen who got on the finance. That's a huge, huge thing. For Mark Klein, again, numbers guy, has the background, he fits the profile. And if you look long term as a possible co-chair replacement someday, because Alberto Darling won't be there forever, you know, Mark Klein, some people say he might be the kind of guy who would run finance someday.
Mark Klein always intrigues me because you ask him, well, you're a CPA, and he says, I'm a forensic CPA. Mm-hmm. Okay, mixed.
Highways. Let's
how
look.
How has it got leap trial balloon?
Oh, not going so well right now. But look.
Saggy?
You got a couple things going on. Transportation Projects Commission approves, what, $500 million a new project, more than that?
600.
Takes a couple off the,
600 million.
Off the table, says, okay, look, we're committed to big things. We want to do I-43 in Milwaukee County area. We want to do this section of 90, you know, big things we're going to do. We're going to be responsible for stuff off, so there's that. Then there's the I-94 debate in Milwaukee. So you're going to double deck.
West of Miller Park.
You're going to double deck I-94 at a cost of $345 million.
Over Mayor Barrett's dead body,
for
2000, over Evan Goyke's
dead body. 2,000 feet of road. I mean, with the realities of the transportation fund, I'm not sure you can pull that off. But, you know, the options are, you go, because Republicans want to do 8 lanes. I mean, that is clear. They want 8 lanes because they want to have it easier for their folks in Waukesha County to get downtown and back. Milwaukee doesn't want that to happen because it impacts, what, 13 businesses, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
Homes have to be pulled up. There's that cemetery right there by Miller Park.
Those graves aren't going anywhere.
So what you got to do, you got to take it from 12 feet down to 11 and, like, have no shoulder or something like that. So there are all these options out there. But, again, another big work committee's big projects. But, okay, how are you going to pay for them? You look at that transportation budget, the trial balloon that Gottlieb flew, and he defended it this week. He's in Milwaukee. We caught up with him, said, hey, this is being driven by the needs. We're going to keep our commitment to motors to do that. You got to do this. I don't see right now a way that Scott Walker embraces a tax increase, A, because it's not in Walker's DNA, and B, how do you go to Iowa and sell, hey, I just raised taxes, and I'm going to be president? You know, how do you do that?
I disagree. I think the governor says we can no longer borrow $991 million over 2 years because we're already, our debt service is 16% of all transportation income. But go ahead. This is your pick.
But here's the other thing. Then does he do a Band-Aid approach? Does he try and pull more GPR in to fix the fund? Now, there's one argument that Walker could sell this as, I raised your gas tax here, but I cut your property tax here. Therefore, you are actually better off under my budget than you were before, but we're taking care of transport. That's still a tough sell. And you have lawmakers, and by the way, WMC, grocers, all these big business groups saying, we think this amount of money being requested is inappropriate, or we question if it's appropriate amount to be requested.
Yes, but they also say, we recognize a need, we recognize a transportation funding hole, but they don't have the courage to say how it should be filled. They just don't like Gottlieb's plan.
That's right. So what's he going to do? The governor's in a difficult position. I think, from talking to people, they believe he wants to do something that is long-term, that fixes the problem, that is big picture. But how do you pull that off with the realities of the legislature you have? And, oh, by the way, $750 million in new taxes and fees. That's a tough sell. But the GPR, you don't have a lot of GPR laying around. So, I mean, if he pulls it off, it's going to be impressive. If he has a long-term solution, it'll be impressive.
But gas prices fell below $2 a gallon in Oklahoma City this week. But anyway, I'm interrupting you. Falling.
Bill Cramer, you know, a year ago, this guy was number two in the assembly. Now he isn't going to, either not there yet, he's going to county jail. He said this week, my career, you know, at the sentencing last week, my career is over. Both as a CPA, as a lawyer, politician, you know, everything I want, it's over for him because this guy could not control himself. And, you know, drinking doesn't excuse it, but he had a litany of problems, and this is his downfall. You know, it's a sad story.
That's a wise choice. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for December 5th.